to read Back to Reality, the best-selling novel of the Bestseller Experiment by the two Marks, go to bestsellerexperiment.com/back to reality.
And subscribe to this podcast to get loads of extra bonuses. Go to bestsellerexperiment.com/subscribe. Let's run the show. Hello and welcome to the Bestseller Experiment, where we look to write, publish and market a book in just 52 weeks. My name's Mark DeVoe.
And I am Mark Stay. And before we jump into the show this week, a huge thanks to the kings of the apps over at Scrivener. They are the sponsors of the entire Bestseller Experiment, all the way from episode one right through to episode 473, where Mark and I both collapse of exhaustion, still working on the 18th draft of the novel. They don't know what they've let themselves in for. But they have a fantastic free trial of Scrivener, which is the official writing app of the Bestseller Experiment, which we've all fallen in love with over here. And you can try it out for free for 30 days. So get yourselves over to literatureandlatte.com.
We have quite the exclusive this week through our many, many incredible lists of contacts that we're building. Mark has got a very exclusive interview. Tell us what you managed to get, Mark, this week.
I managed to gatecrash a Amazon business conference somehow. In my day job, I deal with Amazon every day, and I know a guy called Darren Hardy, who is now the head of KDP, which is Kindle Direct Publishing. That basically, if you self-publish or an independent author and you publish on Kindle, Darren is the guy who runs it in the UK. And this was at an incredible conference they were having in central London, which they were holding for people who sell their wares via Amazon. You know, when we think of Amazon, we think of that kind of buy direct thing. Oh, I'll buy that from Amazon. It comes from an Amazon warehouse and comes to my door. But of course, they're actually a shop window for thousands of small businesses right across the world. And of course, those small businesses include authors, independent authors. And well, I'll leave it for Darren to say, but it's interesting. He says some stuff that we've heard before about taking yourself seriously, about being a business, and some surprising new stuff as well. So shall we jump in?
Absolutely.
Darren, thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, it's a very busy day today.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Tell us about the conference today. What's happening here?
So the idea of today is that we're gathering together a whole succession of small, medium enterprises and sort of business owners, people who are taking the digital economy on and sort of making it work for them. And as part of that, we have a whole session here for authors, authors who are publishing through Kindle Direct Publishing and really sort of using all the tools and processes to help them live the dream of becoming an author. So we have some presentations. We also have some panel discussions where authors will be talking to each other and helping each other out really by sharing advice and experiences that will hopefully inspire another generation of authors to give Kindle Direct Publishing a try.
So, Darren, authors who can't make it here today, how can they access some of the wonderful insights we're hearing today?
So one of the interesting things, this is part of a series of events that we've been running. And if you go onto the KDP YouTube page, there is a video of a session we did in Dublin last weekend, which covers much of the same ground that we're covering here in terms of how you get started. What's the business of publishing as an independent author look like? You know, how do you manage the creativity over the business side of things? And at the moment, we have all 8 hours of that event in one clip. We are working on editing it down into individual sections. So I think anybody who's looking for an insight in terms of some of the things that we're discussing today, that would be a great place to start, as well as the community forums, where there's a whole host of authors sort of helping each other out in terms of some of the key questions that indie authors have when they first start out in the process.
Well, let's go back to basic key questions. What is, I mean, imagine I'm writing a novel for the first time and I've heard of Kindle Direct Publishing. What are the advantages of doing it? Why should I be thinking of Kindle Direct Publishing?
Yeah, I mean, the strengths of independent publishing, there are many. And I think the things that we hear from many authors that are really important for them is the speed. I mean, obviously, there's a hugely intensive creative process that needs to go into writing a book. And we hear authors so often say, you know, focus on getting the book right, because the publishing process is actually relatively straightforward. But it's really important that you have the strongest book that you feel that you can create ready for that publishing process. So I think when you sort of come to think about your options in terms of publishing, the speed of independent publishing, I think, is very important for many people, and keeping control of the process. You know, there are many advantages to lots of different ways of publishing, but I think what independent authors tell us is they love having the control of what does the cover look like? You know, what does the product description look like? How are they going to market that book? How closely can they interact with their readers? You know, and I think independent publishing gives you the option to control each of those things. The royalty rates are market leading, up to 70%. And I think the ability to sort of react to events, to update your product, to sort of really get into the nuts and bolts of publishing and the reader interaction, that probably are the sort of key call-outs for the authors that we hear from.
And are there sort of common best practices that you would recommend for authors starting out?
I think one of the key things that we hear from authors is to take it seriously, to treat it as a sort of a serious thing that you're doing. If you've invested the time to write a book, and you know, we know this can take weeks, months, in some cases years to write a book, then treat the publishing process seriously as well as seriously as that to give your book the greatest chance of success. So think about how you want to market your book. Think about how you want it to appear on the Amazon website and to really sort of give it its best shot. And so whilst the process is really easy and really straightforward, it doesn't mean that you should just sort of bang it out over the course of an hour. You know, you should think about it and you should make sure that you do what's right for you. So, you know, when you're thinking about a marketing plan, think about how you want to interact with your readers. Do you want to interact with readers on Facebook or on Twitter? If you don't, that's fine, but be clear on what you want to do beforehand so that you don't find yourself sort of drawn into areas that you're uncomfortable with. So I think that's probably sort of a key aspect of it. And as part of that, you know, developing a marketing plan, think about how you want to reach your readers. Mark Dawson talks very well about the amount of time he's spent building a mailing list that helps him interact with his readers. Other authors that we've dealt with have focused a lot more on Facebook, for example. Some authors will spend a lot of time making sure that the author page on the Amazon website is really attractive with a photograph, a biography, videos, those kind of things. As an author, you might want to do all of those things. You might only want to do one or two of those things. But sort of think about it ahead of time so that as you launch your book out there into the world, your readers sort of get the best chance of finding it and you're happy that you've given it the best shot for discovery.
And those authors that have succeeded, and Mark Dawson's one of those, we're hoping to speak to him very soon. What helps them get front and center on the Kindle homepage? What is it that you are looking for that you want to display to your customers?
I think it's more about what the customer is looking for, what the reader is looking for. Mark and others talk in quite a lot of detail about the fact they spend time researching what their cover artwork should look like. If you're writing in a particular genre, as a reader, you may have an expectation of what that genre looks like. So if you're writing a gritty crime novel, for example, there will be an expectation of the type of cover that you would expect to see. Similarly, with the product description, if you're writing a lighthearted romance novel, your product description needs to reflect that so that when readers discover your book, they're encouraged to look further, to maybe have a look at the sample of it, to give it a go. Maybe through a promotional deal. And that really is sort of what starts the process rolling, I think, for readers to find your book on the website, think, oh, that looks quite interesting. I'll click on it, I'll have a look at it in more detail, and then hopefully be tempted to buy. And that's really then what helps the book surface in all the right places. You know, we're always looking to recommend new reads to our customers. And if we can see enough customers clicking on a book and buying a book, that enables us to say, oh, yes, we can recommend that to other readers. And so the process rolls from there.
Okay, so it's not just purely sales. I mean, you're looking at things like reviews, the product description, the quality of the product. All of these things count to help you make you more visible on site. Is that what you're saying?
I think from a reader's perspective, absolutely. You know, I think it's very easy for a reader to be put off of a book, you know, to maybe just keep clicking to go and look at something else. So the more you can do as an author, sort of setting out your stall almost in terms of here's why my book is worth a reader's time, having a really interesting cover design and remembering that cover design is going to appear as a thumbnail size on the Amazon website. It's not going to be an A4 sort of multicolored extravaganza on that screen. And things like the product description, really drawing people in. From an Amazon point of view, obviously sales are very important when it comes to how we recommend titles to other readers. But then we have other sort of merchandising features like sort of most wished for and frequently bought together, where there's other sort of variables at play. But I think from an author's perspective, making your product description, making your product page as compelling as possible will give you the greatest chance of getting that traction with readers.
And Kindle Unlimited seems to play a big part in this as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, I mean, the great thing about Kindle Unlimited, it's a subscription program for readers. So you subscribe for £7.99 a month, and then you get unlimited access to a broad range of titles within the store. And I think the great thing about Kindle Unlimited is it's perfect for those readers who are looking to try something different or to maybe look to read lots of titles within fiction or crime fiction, whatever it might be. From an author's perspective, the great thing about being in Kindle Unlimited is it's an easy way for readers to try you out. So it may be, maybe they've heard about you from a friend, but they're not quite sure if your book is the right one for them. Kindle Unlimited, you've paid your subscription as a reader, you may be much more inclined to give it a go. And then that, again, can help the sort of the process turn in terms of somebody trying it in Kindle Unlimited and thinking, yeah, this was a great book, I'm going to go and tell my other friends about it. And then potentially buy the author's other books if you have a backlist or sort of frontlist building that they then pay for, or maybe they then read in the subscription program again. So it's a great sort of discovery program, and we are hearing from many, many authors how it is enabling them to expand their readership and to sort of find new readers all around the world.
And are there any books that have really surprised you in the last 12 months that have sort of shot to the top of the Kindle bestsellers?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the joy of publishing is there are always surprises. I don't think there's anything that has particularly surprised me when you look back on it. I guess that's the challenge. When you look back on a title and you sort of think, well, of course, that's a great reading. You know, the author has put a really great jacket on there, or it's a really great idea. I think certainly over the last year or so, within independent publishing, one title that really created quite a storm was The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep, which I think really just captured people's attention in terms of solving that perennial problem of how do you help your children get to sleep at night. And I think when you look back on it, of course, it's no surprise. It's a great book, a really great author, and a really great idea. But I wonder if 6 months before it was published, whether anybody would have predicted that that would top the charts. So that's one example. But I think the great thing is within the publishing industries, we're all looking to see what's the next big thing going to be.
And what do you think, speaking of the next big thing, I mean, looking ahead into the next 5 years, what do you think are the big changes that are coming in not just independent publishing, but publishing as a whole?
That's a really interesting question. I think one of the things, and we're hearing a lot about it today and heard a lot about it over some of the recent events we were attending, is authors are thinking much more globally now. I think they're really excited about the power of technology to help them find readers. And it's a little bit like the power of independent publishing is it sort of streamlines the process. It gives authors much greater control. But within that as well is that you can reach readers all around the world. And so we know authors, we did an event, as I say, a few days ago in Dublin, where they were reaching readers in the US, they were reaching readers in Australia, and to be sat in your house in a particular town thinking, yes, I can reach readers all around the world, is a really inspiring opportunity. And I think increasingly authors as entrepreneurs are thinking, well, how do I make the most of this opportunity, and can I reach readers all around the world? And those opportunities now, I think, are much easier and are there if you really want to go down that route.
And say if two fellows decided to try and write a bestseller, they'd have to be complete idiots to set off on this course in the first place, but they gave themselves a year in which to top the bestseller charts on Kindle. I mean, the advice you've given us, I think, is absolutely terrific. In terms of marketing that book, in terms of reaching out to potential readers, when would that journey really start? When would you recommend people start putting those building blocks together?
Yeah, I think you start that as soon as you can. I mean, and again, it's down to you. I mean, clearly you've set yourself a very sort of clear target.
I don't like the look on your face, Darren. You've got a very disbelieving, astonished look on your face.
Well, there's nothing to say it can't happen. That's the great joy of these things. You've set yourself a very clear target. And I think for many authors where you're in that position where you have very clear objective that you want to get to, sort of working back from that point, say, okay, what do we need to do? And what do you want to do? Now, it sounds like you want to do everything and anything possible in order to make this happen, and which is absolutely right. So, from that point of view, the marketing starts straight away. I mean, clearly, if you're reaching out to readers, they want to read a book. That's the key thing about being an author, that author sort of reader interaction. But you as an author, you can build a brand. You have all sorts of ways in which, from your own website, from blogs, from podcasts, all those kind of things, you can start to engage your readership and build excitement about this sort of forthcoming product. I don't think you can start early enough with those kind of things. I think the key thing is to keep in mind, this is what it's all building up to, and this is what our objective is. Because who knows, you might suddenly decide actually putting out podcasts is by far the sort of thing that we're most interested in, and that's going to be our key focus. But if you're building up to a book, then keep that momentum going, and good luck.
Thank you. I think we're going to need it. You also, just finally, you also mentioned you have a YouTube page. it seems like you do have resources for authors who are starting out. Where's the best place to start looking?
Yeah, so there's a variety of areas you can go to. Probably the best place to start is kdp.amazon.com, which is the sort of the homepage for KDP, as well as having some instructional videos on there, some sort of help videos, some help content. There's also a link through to the community page where you can go onto the forums and talk to other authors about their experiences. There is a Facebook page that we run where we send out posts fairly regularly with lots of sort of writing tips and sometimes even sort of motivational quotes. I think it's very easy to forget just how hard it is to be an author in the process of creation, and that sort of sometimes you reach that block where you just think, what on earth am I going to do next? And I've sort of reached this stumbling point and I don't really know what how to sort of go forward from it. So every now and then we'll sort of try and post quotes from other authors that have been in exactly the same situation, and here's how they sort of got through it. And so that can be quite useful. And I think talk to other authors. I think that's probably a great other resource as well. We hear one of the things that amazes me about the independent author community is just how generous it is with their time. And when we run events like this, we have many authors who are absolutely delighted to come along and speak about their experiences, because they've all faced a position where they may not have done this. You know, they may have been deterred by something and they just kept going. Somebody helped them get through it and look at the success they've had. And they're really keen to sort of communicate that on. So I think for any author thinking about the start of the author journey, whatever route they choose to go down is, you know, find other authors, talk to other people, and you know, there's lots of support and help out there.
That is absolutely terrific. It also sounds like a lot of hard work. We were wondering if we just bought you a slap-up lunch somewhere that might help, but that's not an option.
Well, you need to buy slap-up lunches for all those readers out there. It's not to do with me, so I don't think that's quite scalable.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, is it? Oh, thank you so much for your time, Darren. Have a great day.
And you. Thank you very much.
Wow, it was like being in the inner sanctum there, wasn't it, Mark?
It was. It actually was an inner sanctum. They took me into a back room where...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, big steel doors. You could probably hear a slight echo in the sound there. but I got out. It was great. We'll put links on the Facebook page and on Twitter as well, because there is a YouTube page, a really good Kindle Direct Publishing YouTube page, which is a goldmine of little tips and tricks if you're setting out independent publishing for the first time. There's some really long ones that are like an hour long from their Dublin conference where they have authors talking about self-publishing. So it's definitely worth checking out.
That's huge for me because, you know, I've never gone through the process of actually putting a book on Amazon. It's something I've done with music, which is interesting. In fact, I've put, you know, digital music and our CDs are on Amazon, but never done it with a book. And we're at that stage in our book where we need to start researching the process. And I'm sure so many people who are writing right now are kind of dreading that moment of, oh, the marketing and, you know, I'm not a very good marketer and what does it take? And so we kind of, to know that there is this resource there is huge for me, because my first question, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we started discussing this off air, we were thinking about, okay, we have to start thinking about learning the process of getting a book on Amazon. And I've written this book about how to write 50,000 words in a month. And so I thought, well, I could use that as an example to put it up on Amazon. But I literally, and I think everyone must feel like this, where do you start? Mm. I reached out to my writing group and I said, you know, a lot of people have been through the process, and to know that there is this kind of entry point. And also the thing that Darren mentioned, which I thought was fantastic, was this idea of a community of people that you can just reach out to and ask all those daft questions that we're kind of afraid to ask. So the timing of this is absolutely perfect.
Well, the thing is as well, if you are doing independent publishing, you will be publishing your book on Amazon. You know, I know they're not the only game in town. We've got iBooks, we've got Kobo, we've got Barnes & Noble and people like that. But Amazon do make up a significant chunk of your market out there. And they want this to work as well. I mean, if you've been looking, we're recording this, it's nearly the end of January, and lots of companies are posting their sales reports, their figures for last year. And a lot of publishers are reporting a decline in ebook sales. And you'll look at the press and people saying, oh, is it the honeymoon is over for ebooks, blah, 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 blah. No one is mentioning is that independent authors, self-published ebook sales are going through the roof. Mm. And I think what was once seen as a kind of vanity publishing, as something that dilettantes dabbled in, you know, we're seeing professional authors coming through like Shannon and making an incredible success of themselves through this. And the general reading public are making the most of this as well. And as we said, you know, Amazon released their trends report and they showed their top 10 best-selling thrillers for 2016. And of course, two of those were independent authors and you couldn't tell which was the independent and you couldn't tell which one was the regular publisher. So it's coming of age. It is yes. coming of age. Yeah. And I think as well, if you are an author published by a mainstream publisher, it's a bit like being the England manager. Sooner or later, you're going to get fired. You know? Sooner or later, you will be dropped by your publisher. There are exceptions, the Ian Rankins of this world, you know, who've been with Orion for, you know, 30 years now, I think. There are exceptions, but most, you know, I go back and look at old sales catalogs and you know, you see authors whose career, you know, the rise and fall of a career. But a lot of them are now saying, well, you know what, do I need a publisher? I know enough about marketing. I know enough about publicity. I know enough about editing. They're setting themselves up as a business. And, you know, Darren was saying stuff that we've heard before from other people, but it's good to hear it said again, which is take yourself seriously. And this is for people who love having control of the cover, the marketing, the royalty rates, you know, all that stuff. It's, you know, if you're starting out, yes, it can be intimidating, but, you know, this is a brave new world and Kindle give you the resources to learn how to do this. And you can apply the lessons that they give you and apply them to, you know, Apple and to Barnes & Noble and whatever, and apply it to your career and have a very successful career across the board. Or if you're one of these people who's been around the block for a bit, then maybe it's time, you know, you can take control and you can become your own business. You know, again, we look at what Shannon does. He mentions Mark Dawson as well, who is a hugely, hugely successful independent author. And I know he was previously published by a mainstream publisher. And he's a great example of someone who's taken the lessons he's learned from a long career and is applying it to independent publishing and is a huge, huge success.
Yeah, and we'll be having him on the show next week.
Yeah,
so we're going to get into the nitty gritty. And what's interesting is what we're hoping to develop as this podcast goes on is, you know, we appreciate, you know, that we're going down the self-published route initially with this book that we're writing. So we have to learn it from the perspective. We've got this fantastic situation with Mr. Stay there, who's worked in traditional publishing, you know, pretty much all his work in life. And my kind of background, having come from the music industry, setting up a record label back in the early 2000s and having done the self-published route successfully, you know, we've sold many, many thousands of albums and so been through the process with music, and we can kind of combine those two things and hopefully get this incredible resource of people like Shannon Mayer, who we interviewed in episode 3 and again in episode 17, Mark, I think, and yes, other independent authors like Mark who will start to show us actually the magic behind what it takes not just to be an independent author but the holy grail of a best-selling independent author. And one of the things that is obviously people are really curious about, and it's really something we've got to delve into and find out more about, but it's the kind of money side of things. One of the things I always remember when went through this boom in the music industry where a lot of artists started to say, do we actually need to be signed to a major label? You know, could we do it ourselves? The thing they always looked at is the sales figures. And they said, in order to earn, and they would talk about the, you know, what would it take, say, to earn a living being a musician? And they might say, okay, let's say 50,000, you know, whether it's pounds or dollars, whichever currency, just take a number. And they would work out a figure based on how many sales I'd have to make with a major record label like a Sony in order for them to earn that money. And then they would look at the opposite statistic, which is how much would they have to sell as an independent, you know, an independent artist selling at maybe a smaller amount, but taking a much larger chunk of the royalty. And the actual figures were phenomenally different. I mean, they're literally 100-fold. Like, to break even, here's an interesting statistic, to break even as an artist signed to a major label, you know, like the latest One Direction boy band or the like, you have to sell in the region of 500,000 albums. And yet to break even as an independent artist, it was somewhere in the region of 10,000 copies of the album. So you think about the difference.
Yeah.
And I think the same rules apply. So when Darren mentioned, he said something about up to 70%. And I wanted to kind of, it might be a question to put out onto Facebook, but for people that are actually publishing, I don't know if you know this, Mark, but for independent authors, what does up to 70% mean? Does that mean that you get 70% once you're selling a certain amount?
So yes, I believe if you price your book between $2.99 and $9.99, you can get a 70% royalty on that sale. And I think if you price below that, which is the 99-cent thing that a lot of people do, you get a much lower royalty. I forget what it is. So that thing of you can't be undercutting people all the time. I think this is Amazon's way of stopping a kind of a dive to the bottom, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is, but this is all part of the mystery. I think you're right. As we go on, as we get closer to a publication date, this is something we're going to have to investigate more and more.
So you'll be coming with us on this journey, because I think we talk a lot about the craft of writing and that we have to write a good book. That's what everyone aspires to do. But then there's this whole other world, the business world, the marketing world, and knowing and talking to many writers, the minute you start mentioning the world of business, the world of marketing, a lot of people have this kind of almost a phobia. You know, like there are people out there when you talk about computers and they go, oh, I just, every time I touch the computer, it breaks.
Yeah.
And they just have this kind of mental block. I see it a lot in coaching, actually. We create this belief system that we can't do business, or we don't understand marketing, or we don't know how to cut and paste something. And I think actually one of the biggest things that we have to break through as writers is the fact that this is the biggest opportunity ever in publishing. I mean, when we pull the Zoom lens out and they're writing the history books of the internet era, you know, the first 100 years of the internet, they're going to be, kids in school are going to be writing about, you know, 2017, 2016 as these years when everything changed, and we can't see it because we're right in the middle of it. And it just seems like, I mean, it's changing so rapidly now, but you imagine looking at that in 100 years from now. And so this is the biggest opportunity. So we have to embrace it, because there's never, we're so blessed to be living in a time where we can have this opportunity at our fingertips, wherever in the world we are. And there's so much resource to teach us, to help us through that process. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy. There's too many options almost.
It is acknowledged across publishing that the ebook revolution is the biggest change to bookselling since the Gutenberg press.
Wow.
You know, the printing press, essentially. And it's had to change the way major publishers work, the way small publishers work. There have been changes all across the board. And it's for the better, because I think it's getting more voices being heard. And it's getting more stories being told, and it's giving an inspiration and giving a career to people who might not otherwise have had that. And that can only be a good thing. I mean, it's like anything, there are always going to be opportunists, and, you know, Kindle has suffered from that. They've had people, because there was a thing where you got a payment based on if people read the whole of your book. So people were putting in super short books, you know, and you got a payment and it was only 5,000 words or whatever.
Was that Kindle Unlimited, where you kind of have the library loaning system and people would read the first page and they would get the, they get the full royalty, the library royalty rate, something like that?
There have been loads of these, you know, people, there's always someone out there, some crafty sod who will find a loophole, you know. And to be fair to Kindle, they find these and they shut them down. You know, they want this to work. They need this to work, because I think for them, if you look at how Amazon has evolved in the last 20 odd years, you know, they are now in the content creation business. You know, they now make movies. They now make award-winning TV shows. There's a thing in the news just this week. They've launched a £20,000 literary prize for Kindle authors. It's called the Kindle Storyteller Award, and it's open to authors writing in English who've launched their books on Kindle. And, you know, that's great. That's a literary award. This is not, I don't think your potboiler authors are going to win this. They're looking to get some literary kudos. You know, I'm convinced Jeff Bezos wants to win an Oscar. You know, this is why he's pumping so much money into movies and TV shows and stuff. And here, you know, I think they're aware that self-publishing is coming of age, that it's coming out of this kind of vanity project era. And we're now seeing some really good authors. And to do that, they're backing it up because, frankly, no one else in mainstream publishing will do it. So they're leading the way again. And it is fascinating. I mean, Amazon get a lot of stick for being this big monolithic company, but then they do something like this, which is incredibly thoughtful.
They also, it's easy to forget as well. Like I started life in the internet in the mid-90s. I was developing websites, some of the very first e-commerce websites. In fact, I was behind the Comic Relief first donations on their elite e-commerce website. So and also I was in charge of the Lady Diana Memorial Fund. We did websites for these huge companies, and it was the era when I don't think Amazon were even I can't remember when they launched, but when they did launch.
I think it was about 95, 96.
It was around, that time. Yeah. Because I remember the day that they bought a book website, and I can't remember who it was, but there was a book. Yeah. I almost launched the Yahoo of UK because I had this grand idea. I'd seen Yahoo launch in the States and I thought, that would be a great idea. Why don't I do a UK search engine? Didn't do it. And then, of course, the one that did got bought for like 10 million within a year. But the same was happening with Amazon. Amazon started in the US and they bought a UK book company that was a bookseller, I think.
Yeah.
Or they did book reviews or something. Yeah. And we forget that that's how they started. I mean, now you look at it, like you say, and it's this incredible warehouse. They're even doing drone deliveries now. I didn't know if you read about that, Mark.
Oh, I've seen the videos.
Have you seen them? Yeah. Because in the US and North America, they haven't yet allowed that to happen. But I think they did the first trial in Cambridge just before Christmas, where they delivered, I think it's within 15 minutes of ordering it, they can actually deliver a package onto your doorstep, which is, from an author's point of view, imagine somebody like gets a book recommendation. They could actually be reading your book within half an hour. That's insane.
I do worry that in places like America, where everyone's armed, they'll be shooting them down out of the sky.
It'd be like clay pigeon shooting, a whole new sport.
Daddy, what did you get? It's an Xbox, son.
Oh, that's a great idea of a story, Mark. You just give it away on air. But anyway, yeah, love it. But I do think we've got to remember that Amazon started this revolution, and what they've actually created in the time that they've created it is quite phenomenal. And really, the marketplace that is now available to us as authors is because of what they've done. And I think, kudos to them. I think I often have this idea, people kind of moan about the success of people like Google and bigger companies. But I think if they've come up with it, they've worked it. And they do, like you say, this idea of gaming the system. We see that a lot on social media, people like working out how to build their Facebook and Twitter pages kind of illegally or with fake numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And it happens everywhere. Amazon are just one of the many that have to deal with that. And like you say, there'll always be some other way of trying to beat that. But genuinely, I think what we're focusing on is how do you build an audience?
I mean, it sort of takes me back to something Darren said. He said, what helps the book surface? That was his word. What helps the book surface? And I think he's right, because there is a sea of stuff on Amazon. There's so much on there now that making yourself visible is very, very difficult. Very difficult to stand out. But they are at least giving you the tools to do that, without doing these shortcuts, without conning people, It's the ones that drive me nuts are you see these books online where it says Gone Girl, a summary, and it's like $2.99. And it's just someone has written a synopsis of Gone Girl and maybe cut and pasted some stuff off Wikipedia, some critical analysis in inverted commas. And yet when you look up Gone Girl, it's like the second one on the search results, It's like, what?
Oh, I know.
But then a few days later, it'll be gone. Because Amazon do monitor the stuff, or we report it, It must be impossible to police now, but they seem to be doing it. It's an incredible company.
It's amazing. And who knows? I mean, the other thing is, if you're sitting there listening to this podcast thinking and dreaming about one day becoming an author full time, I mean, that's what I often hear from people when I coach people, that the first goal, like stage one, first base on the baseball diamond is to be able to earn a living so that you can quit your day job and be able to work full time as an author. And I think to look at where things are going, it's only going to get better for independent authors, I believe. I think that what we're looking at today is a very evolved situation from, say, the early 2000s, late 1990s. And yet, where's it going to be in 5 years? That's what fascinates me. If we start investing in learning about Kindle, learning about the online sites today, like with Shannon, Shannon Mayer started putting her books online a few years ago as an independent author, then had a deal with Amazon. Amazon published her book. And of course, as soon as people found her book published by Amazon, they then could discover her entire back catalogue of 30 plus novels, which to have that ready, I mean, obviously it's a phenomenal amount of books to write, but even if you had, say, two or three books, it might be your fourth book that actually breaks you, but it means that your other three are there. And when people discover you, whenever they discover you, I found this with music, if people discover your most recent album, the first thing they do is they go and buy your whole back catalogue if they like you. Mm. So you're investing every day when you write, you're investing in these assets that we call books, which will serve you over time to reach that goal of one day becoming a full-time author. So it's about embracing it. That's what I feel is really important for people to think about.
Is that your motivational minute? That felt very motivational.
No,
minute,
I've got an
minute.
Even better one than that.
Oh, good,
actually.
Good.
Sorry,
good.
I'm very okay. fired up today. I'm very motivated.
So. I was just looking because I'm trying to remember the name of that online bookstore that Amazon.
Maybe we should ask people to put it online for us.
I should know this. It's my job to know this. But I've found a little bit of trivia. In September 1994, Jeff Bezos purchased the URL relentless.com and briefly considered naming his store Relentless, but friends told him the name sounded a bit sinister.
Could you imagine? Yeah.
But I think that sums him up, you know, Relentless Bezos, you know, yeah. That's who he is, you know.
It's absolutely.
Because he's making rocket ships now.
I know. It's absolutely incredible. I think it's, you know, incredible company and incredible man. One of the things as well I was going to touch on that I felt was really interesting was it kept coming up in the interview with Darren was this idea of reader interaction.
Mm.
Is that the official kind of term that you use in the publish industry or is there something else?
No, Amazon have their own language of their own, I tell you.
Right.
Yeah, they speak their own business Amazonese. I guess, I mean, for them, it's like you're saying with Shannon, for example, you know, if she'd published 30 books back in the 80s and had a local bookstore, with the best will in the world, that local bookstore would not be able to store all those books. They wouldn't be able to tell her. They might say, oh, yeah, this kind of person comes in and buys your book or whatever. But Shannon and any independent author now has the ability to have a one-to-one with their customer because it used to be a very straight line. It used to be author, agent, publisher, wholesaler, bookseller, reader. Now you can hop all the way over those and go straight from author to reader if you wish. That's possible. Mm. Mm. Personally, I think it's more of a kind of spider web now because you can, I think if you're smart, you take advantage of all these options, which we see someone like Shannon doing. She's dealing directly with her readers, but she's also dealing with an editor. She's also dealing with publishers who are putting her in bookshops and stuff like that, you know. So that's the big revolution that's changed. You know, there used to be a big distance between you and your reader. And, you know, you'd speak to authors who didn't really know who their readers were. They might meet them at signings or at conventions, perhaps, and that, of course, still goes on. But now, I mean, we're seeing it with our audience online, the people who follow us on Facebook and Twitter, the conversations we're having. We're getting a very good idea of the kind of people who are following us, what they like, what they enjoy reading, you know, and as an author, that can only help focus how you write, you know? And I shouldn't say you should pander to an audience, but if you know that people are responding to this kind of thing or that kind of thing, then yeah, you know, make them happy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's
I mean, I think
it's we do have to
look at the flip side of that though. And I think with the incredible opportunity, with the absolutely incredible opportunity there is out there. And this fact that, like you say, you're completely right, Mark, you can get in contact with any one of those different chains, or you can jump straight to the reader. But as a writer, what can sometimes happen is we now almost have too many options.
Yeah.
I hear this over and over again when I coach, that people are overwhelmed. They don't know where to start. They don't know whether to, you know, what they should be doing on social media. Should it just be Facebook or just Twitter or all of them?
Yeah.
Or if they should even do social media at all, because you kind of, once you get involved in social media, it's a bit like birthing a baby and you have to then feed it and clothe it and change its diaper every now and again. And you've got to keep on, you know, watering the plant, as it were. And I think that is one of the big things I'm hearing from a lot of people is it's the overwhelm. It's like, I just don't know where to start. And in some ways it becomes paralysis through choice.
Yeah.
But what I would say,
yeah,
what I'm really feeling really strongly is that anyone that wants to get involved in the writing world today has to make a really important decision. And that decision is, yes, I first and foremost want to be a writer. That's why we all do it. That's why we all get into it. It's the reason why we want to get our books out there and share them with the world. But you have to make a decision when you want to go public as a writer. You don't want to write your own memoirs or journals. You have to say, and I'm also committing to taking this step into this big, scary world of self-publishing and being open to learn about the steps you need to take and not be scared of it. Mm. Just know that it's going to be overwhelming at the beginning because there's so much to take on. But it's like, I don't know if you remember back to the very first day you started in a new job. I joined this internet company, as I mentioned, in the 90s, and I was thrown into a consulting division. And it was, like you said about Amazon, like this, there was all this language that I just didn't understand. It was all about web servers and internet stuff, TCP/IP. And I was like, I had no idea what people were talking about. And I literally came home after the first week and I thought, I can't do this. It's like Greek. It's like a foreign language. And I think that's what a lot of authors feel like when they kind of cross the threshold and they go into the world of Kindle or the world of self-publishing. But we all know that anything that overwhelms us to begin with, if we just kind of say, okay, I don't understand any of this, but trust that over time, if you pick up a little bit every day, it will start to make sense. Mm. And from what Darren was saying, he said that I'm sure they've worked really hard to simplify the process as much as possible. I mean, what are you hearing on the streets with regards to how easy it is to actually put something up on?
Yeah, it's very user-friendly. A friend of mine put a book online just before Christmas. I'm going to give it a plug. It's by my friend Steve Mayhew, and it's called Connemara Days. And it's all about the making of the movie The Quiet Man, the John Wayne, John Ford movie in Ireland. It's fiction. It's about the effect it has in a village. And he uploaded that just before Christmas. And, you know, there were, I think, the financial side of things, the bank accounts and stuff like that, that can be a bit tricky. But actually uploading it, the process is very good. You're able to check what your book looks like as it would look on a Kindle device, and not just one Kindle device, but all of the different Kindle devices. So you get to look at it. If something doesn't look right, then you come back, you make an adjustment, you put it back up again. You know, it's that final stage where you just give it make it look right before it goes up there. He felt it was pretty straightforward. So it's one of these things that I think improves, that all Amazon are always looking at improving the process.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we're going to be doing as part of our experiment is we don't want to have our first book be the actual novel we're writing, the first book that we actually put on the system, because that, you know, there's a risk involved of it, you know, messing up or, you know, we want to learn the process. So, you know, I've written this instructional book about, you know, 30 different ways to write 50,000 words in a month. And we're going to go through that process of putting that on Kindle so we can talk about that over the next coming months.
Yeah.
And talk about some of the, you know, how easy it was, maybe some of the challenges. One thing I have heard from some writers is just because of the nature of the evolving industry, things do change quite often. So you kind of learn the system, as it were, and then a new technology or something new comes out and you have to update and learn. So I think there's also a recognition here that once you get into this process, there is also, you know, once you've sussed it out, so to speak, it's a bit like having a new child. You think you've sussed it out, and then a new child comes along and it's slightly different from the last one. You can't use the rule book with them. So there is a continued learning process that every time you put up a new book, it might be, you know, it might be slightly different.
But again, there are forums for this. There are, you know, Facebook groups for this. Darren mentioned kdp.amazon.com, which, you know, if you go there, you'll be able to get answers to all your questions. And if any of the jargon baffles you, then, you know, find a forum, Google it. What does Kindle Unlimited mean, you know, and you'll get an answer to it. I think, you know, there are always people out there. I mean, we're talking about people like Mark Dawson. If you follow him on Twitter or whatever, he's someone who's giving a leg up to people. It's what Sarah Pimber was talking about a couple of episodes ago. People who are successful are very good at helping those trying to make their own way up. So if you ask for help, it will be given, you know.
How many books has Mark sold? Is it in excess of 2 million? I think it was over 2 million, wasn't it?
It's something absolutely extraordinary.
Something ridiculous. Mark will be on the show next week, so don't miss that episode. He is another leading light. We're very fortunate. The other thing I was going to throw out there as well, we've noticed as our audience has built over the last few months with this podcast, and thank you for everyone who's just giving us some incredible feedback. We absolutely love to hear from you. But we've also noticed quite a few very successful indie authors, quite a few very successful published authors who are following us now as well. And yeah, we would love to hear your tips. So come onto Facebook, come onto Twitter. As we start moving into this world of, you know, we're not crossing the threshold. We're going to be talking about writing, obviously, throughout the whole of this series. But as we start moving more and more into that kind of the big question of like, well, how do you market the book? How do you publish the book? We'd love to hear from people who are out there who are absolutely finding ways of making their books successful, because I think this is part of what we want to do with this podcast, is to share this information, inspire people. So if you have had success, I would say, what do you think? Say, should we put like 50,000 sales or 100,000 sales in your self-publishing career? Let us know on our Facebook page.
Bestseller XP on Twitter and Instagram, and just look up the Bestseller Experiment on Facebook.
Absolutely.
We'll be waiting for you.
So come and tell us your stories, because, you know, we would love to hear about them. We may even feature them on the show, which would be obviously fantastic for everyone. So the other thing I was going to just talk about is, we obviously, Kindle Direct Publishing is fairly self-explanatory as a title. And my understanding of that, for people who are also kind of working all this out, is it's the place where you go as an independent author to upload your book and get it onto Amazon. But there's this other thing which people talk about called Kindle Unlimited. And Mark, I mean, as I understand, it's like a library system, but maybe you want to explain to everyone exactly what Kindle Unlimited is and how it differs from Kindle Direct Publishing.
Well, Kindle Unlimited, you can opt into this if you're an author. I mean, basically, if you're a customer, it's great because you have unlimited reading and unlimited listening.
It's like an online
library.
Lending library where you can. So it's like one of those like Spotify or iTunes where you pay a fee. Yeah. Is that the idea? And you can get access to as much.
Yeah. So as I understand it, I think it can be part of Amazon Prime. Or for $9.99, yes, you can just have it as for reading and for audiobooks, and you can switch between. It's that thing as well. You can switch between the audiobook and the Kindle edition if you wish.
Oh, that's clever.
Of course, not every publisher has signed up for this. I know Hachette haven't done it. I know a lot of the major publishers haven't done it because they're kind of wary of giving away books for free, devaluing the books. That's their feel with that. And I think there's a valid argument there that if people start, but then again, this has always gone on. People have always loaned each other books. People have always gone to libraries. People have always read secondhand books as well. So it's an interesting thing. It's definitely, I think if I'm an independent author, I'd be very interested in trying it out and seeing. And again, if anyone's tried it out there, we'd be very interested to know what your story is. Has it worked for you, or did you see an uplift in sales? Again, I think the advantage is if you write a series, if you're a Shannon Mayer and you're writing a series with a series character and you put book one on there on Unlimited and you have the rest of your series, you know, for $3.99 or whatever it is, then I think that's great. You know, you get them in with one free book, and then the rest, you know, people get hooked with book one, then they rush off and buy the rest of the series. And as you said, Mark, you know, people will gobble up the whole series. So
excellent. And what about this book, The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep?
Yeah, I remember this shooting up the Amazon chart completely out of the blue. Every mainstream publisher was, I think, you know, bidding for it as well in the end. I think Ladybird got it in the end. But this was an example of a self-published book that caught everyone on the back foot. I think it got some reviews and some publicity somewhere. And it's a great example of an author identifying a need. It's, you know, it's this story that you tell children that will send them to sleep, which might not sound like a great plug for a book. It sent me to sleep in 20 minutes, you know, but if you're trying to get a toddler off to sleep, and it works, there's a method. It's kind of a bit like hypnosis almost, where you repeat words and it lulls them into a snooze, you know. And there have been so many copycat books since as well, which is always an interesting thing.
Is one of the copycat books that kind of comedy one, Go the
No, that came
to sleep.
That came before.
It came before.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, that came before.
Interesting.
As far as I'm
as
aware,
as a parent, and any parents out there, having a book that sends children to sleep is probably one of the best parenting aids ever.
Doesn't Samuel L. Jackson read the audiobook of Go the F to Sleep?
He does. Yes.
genius.
So what was it, you saw this happen, but it's, this was an independently, was it independently published? Or was
it was independently, wow. And, you know, he had his own illustrator as well. So this was wow. We're used to seeing novels, independent novels doing well, like The 50 Shades of Grey and The Martian, where they were self-published first, then picked up by a publisher and sent to another level. I think this was the first time we'd seen a children's book, an illustrated children's book, do this. So again, it's just another sign that this side of the industry is coming of age, and there's a legitimacy to this now.
Well, maybe if Carl Johan, who's the author, if he's out there and listening to the show, I'd love to find out what was the thing, because often when you kind of go behind the story of something that just suddenly, like a shooting star, there's often something that triggers it. It can sometimes be a crucial review, or sometimes it might be a celebrity who flashes the book on Oprah. Or I remember with one celebrity, she, with Eckhart Tolle's novel non-fiction book, The Power of Now, she was holding it as she came out of a rehab center, and so everyone, I think it was Paris Hilton, everyone took photos of it, and that was around the world. And then that book became an overnight sensation.
That's what Joe Hill was telling us, wasn't it? We need someone famous to come out of rehab with our book in their hand.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this in rehab, no. But this kind of stuff fascinates me, because it's not a science. There's no formula to why a certain book, you know, sometimes it can just be a combination of events. But often there's a defining moment. If you ask people when you interview them, there's a defining moment where something happened. And then that's the moment they saw the momentum, the tipping point happen.
Yeah.
And so if you've seen that with your book, you know, if you maybe were struggling to get your book out there and suddenly saw this tipping point happen, we want to hear from you. Tell us about what happened. Come to the website. We've got a contact us page there. Tell us your story, because we want to share these stories with people. And obviously we'd love to learn from you as well, because part of this experiment is trying to learn about these different ways that a book can suddenly bubble up and surface. Mm. So on that note, Mark, I've got a bit of a 1 minute motivation that I just wanted to dive in, which is absolutely relevant to everything we talked about today. Yep. So if you resume the position of your yoga pose. We do these Skypes, actually. We do these interviews and recordings on Skype, so Mark and I can see each other, which is quite amusing. And I won't tell you what Mark's doing right now. Anyway, this week's motivational minute. This week's motivational minute is actually about taking the first steps to becoming a published author. In the olden days, when I was a lad, it was all about trying to get signed to a traditional publisher. And in the music world, it was exactly the same, you know, major label, traditional publisher, completely interchangeable. The classic thing now is, though, if you want to get published by a traditional publisher, there is absolutely no harm in becoming well known first as a self-published author. And so I think that a good first step for anyone is to look at publishing your first book self-published, even if your dream is to become a published author. Because if you become successful as a self-published author, you are going to be much more attractive to a traditional author. In fact, there's a lot of authors that are getting picked up. And when you think about it, and I'll give you the analogy in the music world, if you think about those X Factors, The Voices, all the shows, what they're actually doing is, over the series of the show, they're eliminating contestants, and then the audience's favorite becomes the winner, and it guarantees that person selling the most number of copies of whatever it is they're selling. And so now, with things like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, we all have platforms in which to show who we are and what we can do as an author. And so the risk of a publisher taking on a brand new author who has no platform, has never even self-published, is very high compared to somebody who's already got an established audience, who's maybe already shown that they've got a bit of marketing nous behind them. So even if you're thinking of going down the publishing route, I would say, don't wait for the bus to show up. Start by walking between bus stops. And if a publisher comes along and wants to pick you up, brilliant. That's guaranteed. Self-publishing is the only way that will guarantee you that you can eventually reach your goal that you're getting towards. So it's about taking action and being proactive and embracing this opportunity, rather than having everything external to you. It's somebody else's decision as to whether you get published. Own it, and then it will happen.
I used to be able to get my ankle around the back of my ear, but I can't do it anymore. Not the man I used to be, DeVoe.
I know. Oh, my goodness. But it's so weird, Mark. You know, musicians say this a lot to me. They say, I want to get signed to a major label. And I say, right, first thing you've got to do is build up a Facebook audience. You've got to go out there and put your music on iTunes. They think, but that seems counterintuitive. And I say, no, because major labels will look at people who are out there making it happen. That's who they want to sign and work with, not the people who have got the great book. Because everyone's got the great music. And then they get to pick and choose, well, who are the good marketers? Who are the good people getting out there? So I don't, does that resonate with you?
It does. But next week, when we speak to Mark Dawson, he'll have a different point of view on that relationship.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil it for you. Let's tease the audience. Mark has a different point.
Oh, you're evil.
Well, Mark has come from a major publisher background and then gone into independent publishing. So his point of view is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. So excellent. Tune in for that next week, folks.
Fantastic. So, Mark, have you got a question of the week for us?
Yes, I've got a doozy, actually. This is great. This is a craft question. We've not talked much about craft in this episode, so I thought I'd balance it a bit. And this is from Kathy Taylor, who is in sunny San Diego, California. Now, I'm in very, very cold England at the moment, so hello to everyone in San Diego. It's on rewriting and wordsmithing. That's a lovely word, isn't it? Wordsmithing.
Yeah.
And I think she's very much starting out on her writing journey. She's got, "Dear Mark and Mark, your podcast has inspired me to put first words to paper or screen." Yay! And she says yay, actually, in her email. She says, "I listened to it in the car with my 11-year-old son. First of all, we'd like to apologize for the Sarah Pimber episode then. We hope you got the warning before the swearing happened. And they're really enjoying it, especially the interview with Robin Stevens." Yay! Her son, he gets frustrated when things aren't perfect the first time, so it's good for him to hear about rewrites. And that is interesting because a lot of writers, when they start out the rewrite, so her question is about rewrites. She says, "What exactly do you mean by rewrites?" She says, "Does an author take their current version and dissect and evaluate it? A paragraph at the time." She says, "Like a before and after transformation where the old version is on the left side of the screen and the shiny new version is on the right. Or for the rewrite, does an author lock away his first version and just do the whole thing over without looking at it?" Well,
interesting.
I would say no to both of those. This is what I do, Kathy. And as I understand it, this is how most authors would do it. But again, if you're an author out there, if you've got a different way of doing this, and I think we might ask this question of future authors as well. I create a duplicate of the original document. So I tend to label and number my documents. So there'll be version 1, version 2, version 3, version 4. That way, I've always got that old version. If I think, you know what, I really like that scene where X, Y, and Z's happened, or I really like that line that I deleted, maybe I could bring that back. That way, it's always there in an old document. So when we get to the end of our outline, Mark, we'll call this version 1, and then we'll open version 2, which will be a duplicate document, the same mess that we've got now. Okay. But what we'll do, first of all, so I create a duplicate, and then I overwrite that document. But first of all, give yourself some distance. Now, normally, I would advise at least 6 weeks. Work on something else, start another project. Because you need at least 6 weeks to look at it with fresh eyes. And at the moment, Mr. DeVoe here has gone rather pale because we've only got 52 weeks in which to do this insane idea. But I think, you know, we'll just have to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you read it again and try and read it like someone reading it for the first time. And you will see mistakes, tons of them. Mistake after mistake after mistake. It's kind of a depressing experience because I know that feeling of that euphoric feeling of finishing a draft thinking it is perfect and holy in every way. And then you walk away from it. And even 24 hours later, you look at it and go, oh God, what was I thinking? But maybe just read it once without making any notes, then read it again and start making notes. And, you know, use, if you're using Word or using Scrivener or using whatever, you'll have something, you have the ability to make notes in the notes column on the right-hand side or whatever. you will then have a shopping list of corrections to make. You're going to have big, broad notes like, this character is completely unnecessary. I don't like the way this person speaks. This subplot is completely useless. This chapter is completely extraneous, or this didn't work, or that didn't work. And then you're going to have medium and minor notes. Those, I would advise leaving those till later. Deal with the big stuff first. Step back and look at the broad picture. Have you got a story with a beginning, middle, and an end that comes together? What doesn't work? What are the common bumps in the road? And then you go back and you start correcting them, and you start making changes. And it's like a sculptor working with clay. You will constantly be working this thing into shape, constantly. And it's something that the more you do it, the better you get at it. The first time you do a rewrite, it is hell on wheels. Because you think, didn't I just do this? Didn't I just work for weeks and weeks or months and months on this? You know, but second time round, it's hard. Third time round, it's a little bit easier. Fourth time round, there are fewer and fewer things to change, fewer and fewer things to change. And in the end, you get to a point where you do go a bit word blind. You can't see the wood for the trees. That's a good point to stop and then give it to someone else to read. And then we'll come on to that on another episode, I think, getting other people to read your work. Because then you'll get, as Sarah Pimbra said a couple of weeks ago, you'll get notes that will be like a punch in the gut. And they really are. Things you think really work. People go, I don't get it. I don't get this at all. And it is hard. It will be hard for you to hear. But I think, you know, if you're able to develop a thick skin, take those ideas on board. You don't have to change everything that they say, but listen. Step back, give yourself some distance again. This is why it takes so long to write a novel. You're constantly stepping back, like the sculptor, looking at it and saying, you know what, his nose is too big. The ears are in the wrong place. He's got, you know, he's got a trunk in the middle of his face. You know, they're huge mistakes that didn't seem obvious to you at the time. But once you step back and someone points it out to you, you slap your forehead and you go, what was I thinking? I'd just like to say, Kathy also has a little PS. She says, every time you mention a book, I get it on my Amazon wish list. She's just ordered Robin Stevens' first book, yay, and Adrian Mole for my son. Well, if you'll permit me, Kathy, I would like to plug my book, Robot Overlords, which would be perfect for your 11-year-old son. It's designed exactly for that age group, and it's available on Amazon and all good bookshops in ebook and paperback and audiobook. Thank you.
And actually, you know, you could have just let me do the plug, Mark, because I've just been reading it to my 12-year-old son. Yeah. We do this thing where we're still at bedtime. It's lovely. We actually still read. We take it in turns now rather than me reading to him.
Right, right.
So we do a chapter each, and I've been reading your book, Robot Overlords, to my 12-year-old son.
And you're still talking to me. That's good.
He loves it. He loves it. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm hooked. Brilliant. I'm absolutely hooked.
Cool.
So yeah, check out Mark's book.
Could he leave a review on Amazon, please?
Yeah, and I was going to say to everyone that wants to support this podcast, go buy Mark's book, because actually it's the reason. Here we go. Okay. Desi public appeal. So Mark's book is the reason why you're listening to us talking right now. The reason we're doing this podcast, it was Mark's book, the movie that originally started, which if you're checking this out, you know, partway into our, you haven't listened from day one. We know a lot of people are doing the kind of Netflix binge listening to the podcast, which we still find brilliant. But Mark's originally wrote a screenplay, and it became a movie with Gillian Anderson and Sir Ben Kingsley.
Sir Ben.
And it was like this massive budget movie, $22 million or something. That was what brought us together, because I became, as I said, you know, earlier, I'm fascinated by people that have created something incredible in their life. And I reached out to Mark and we got chatting, and you know, a year later or so, we came up with the idea for the podcast. Hmm. So if you're enjoying the podcast, you're getting value from it, I demand this second you go to Amazon and you buy Mark's book as an acknowledgement of, you know, what he's done. Because I think actually, you know, what's great about the fact that we're doing this podcast is, you know, Mark's made it happen. So in some ways, for me, that's massively inspiring to be working with Mark. But at the same time, it's showing us that this is possible. And Mark's probably one of the most humble guys. And I'll say this on air, he's probably one of the most humble guys that you'll meet. And he never bigs himself up enough. So please go out and buy Mark's book. And I'll be reminding you in future episodes to do the same.
God bless you. And there you go, Mark.
If you sell a couple of copies,
Thank you very much.
I'll take 10% commission on all
well,
that.
Well, actually, if you... Yeah, okay. 10% of bugger all, still bugger all. actually, if you're interested in writing, in the back of the book are my diaries from the shoot while we were making the film. So I talk a little
Which
bit about
brilliant.
The writing and the making of in
yeah,
the back there
I
as
read
well.
Those.
So yeah. Yeah, that might be...
I actually read those first before I read the book.
Yeah, yeah.
I was so fascinated because what basically is this mark on set with the making of the film, and it's a real bird's eye view into... Mm. You know, if you dreamed of ever having a book become a film... and seeing it from the kind of writer's perspective, you've got to read those notes. Like the minute you met Sir Ben Kingsley, I found quite amusing. So it's worth getting just alone for that, because that's it's actually quite a unique. I've never seen that done in a book before, actually.
Well, there were books. Bob Balaban did a book about the making of Close Encounters, which I read as a kid and I found absolutely fascinating. And it was very frank. It was very honest. And they don't really make those books anymore. Any making of book is usually just about the art, or it's everyone loved each other. So, you know, I wanted, you know, if some kid reads my diaries and thinks, wow, this makes sense to me. I can make a movie. I could write a script. Then it's job done for me, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant stuff. Excellent. And actually, just before we finish up, because we've come to the end of this episode now, Mark mentioned about, you know, the importance of taking version numbers or saving your documents. And that's one of the things I just wanted to quickly talk about with Scrivener today, because one of the reasons why we use Scrivener, it's as we always say, it's incredible whether you're using it by yourself, with an editor, or when you're co-writing a book, is there is a feature on Scrivener called Snapshot. And what Snapshot is at any point during your writing, you can press this button, Snapshot, and it automatically creates a version. It kind of literally freeze frames everything in the document. And it's very handy. I mean, you can use Snapshot every time you open up a new session. Or you can use Snapshot, like Mark was talking about, this idea. That's what we'll be doing, Mark, is we'll be doing a Snapshot and then renaming it version 2. But you can go back, a bit like with these... You know, if you use Google Docs or Dropbox, you know, when you make changes, it kind of saves every single version. Well, Snapshot enables you to do that. And that is very, very handy. I found it save our bacon a couple of times.
Yeah.
And so it's like version numbering on steroids. And that is, you know, that's something that you only get in these writing tool softwares where they've really thought about it. So if you're interested in trying out Scrivener, do pop over to the website literatureandlatte.com.
And please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. It makes a huge, huge difference. Drop us a line over at bestsellerexperiment.com, where you will find The Vault of Gold, which is our free ebook, which has contributions from the likes of Michael Connelly, Joanne Harris, Sarah Pimbra, Joe Hill, all sorts of amazing names, Brian Cranston talking about their writing experiences and stuff in there that will inspire you. We're on Facebook at Bestseller Experiment, Twitter at Bestseller XP, Pinterest with pretty pictures, Instagram at Bestseller XP 2.
And talking of Joe Hill, we didn't mention this in the episode with him last week, but we have the most amazing giveaway to announce in today's show, don't we?
Oh, it's gorgeous. We got a first edition signed hardback of his epic novel, The Fireman. It's a special limited edition with red edges, which they did for Waterstones. We kept some back for competitions. And there's only about 1,000 printed, I think. He signed that. We've also got a t-shirt featuring Camp Wyndham, which is the, I don't want to spoil the book for you, but it's a destination in the book, which perhaps maybe you want to avoid the second time round. And it's a fantastic extra large t-shirt. So we're giving away the book and the t-shirt in our competition, and it's a must have, I think.
Absolutely. So get along to the website. You'll look on the navigation bar. There is a win menu bar there button. Click on that. And you will also find other competitions that we still have running, from the likes of all signed books from Sarah Pinborough. We have
Maria Semple, Michelle Paver, John Connolly, Shannon Mayer, all sorts.
Absolutely. And I'm put up a competition there of my 4 most inspiring books to get you inspired in your writing journey, to give you motivation. So check out those competitions. There's some of them are ending very soon, so make sure you jump on board right now. So Mark, thank you very much for another very interesting and unique episode today. That was fantastic chatting with Darren, and I'm sure we'll be pulling a lot more of his knowledge into future episodes as well.
Definitely. And next week we've got a good one with Mark Dawson, so tune in then, folks.
Brilliant stuff. So it's a goodbye from Mark 1
and it's goodbye from Mark 2. Goodbye.